You know what's a great word? Ineffable. Ineffable. When something is so big, so grand, so out there that you just cannot put words to it. The first time I saw Bernini's St. Teresa in Ecstasy in Rome was an ineffable moment for me. It's how I felt when I met my wife for the first time. 3 a.m. outside of the basement of a bus station that would turn into a gay nightclub. It's a whole other story. Ineffable. And it's how I felt the moment that when the Reverend Natalie Conway sat me down in our church and told me that the founders of the church had enslaved her ancestors. Ineffable. It's a great word. It's a great word because it sort of sounds like another word that I wanted to say at that moment. But let's back up a little bit before I get deeper into the story. I didn't know then, but I know now, that Natalie had to make a whole bunch of choices before she came and told me that story. She had learned from her brother and her brother's Ancestry.com research that their family had been enslaved at Hampton Plantation, and she learned that the founder of our church, Charles Woodley Howard, had been born at Hampton Plantation, and she learned that they had been born, her ancestor, Hattie Cromwell, who was her great-grandmother, had been born the same year as Charles Woodley Howard, in the same place at Hampton Plantation. And he was born free, and she was born enslaved. And she learned all this, but she didn't know if she was going to tell anybody. Because, and friends, I don't know if you know this, but white people don't always react well when you tell the truth about racism. I know, shocking. So she had to decide if she could tell me this story. And while I am super proud and excited that she was willing to tell the story and all that it has meant for our church and our community, I feel a little bit of shame that I had the potential to be the first stumbling block in that effort. Ineffable. But she told me the story, and then I knew immediately this was something we had to go and tell a lot of people. But it had to be on her terms, with her wishes, and in her way. Why? Because, friends, I don't know if you know this, but white people don't always make a great environment for black people to talk about race. Or as another parishioner said to me, Gray, I like these people, and I'm afraid they're going to say something that's going to change that. It was could have been easier for her to just kind of quiet quit and go away. Or just stay in the church and pretend like she didn't know this story. But that, for her, would have been ineffable. So instead, July 2019, she sat me down inside the church right after services under a plaque to Charles Ridgely Howard. The church is it's Memorial Episcopal Church. It was a memorial to Charles Ridgely Howard. And as we sat under this plaque to Charles Ridgely Howard, she said, Gray, Charles Ridgely Howard enslaved my great-grandmother, Hattie Cromwell, at Hampton Plantation. Ineffable. I did not know what to say, and I did not know what we were going to do. The first thing that we did was we gathered as a community and we went to Hampton Plantation. And we visited the gardens, visited the manor house, visited the slave quarters. And if you've ever been to Hampton, you walk into this big, great room, and it is filled with portraits. There must be 100 portraits in this room, including portraits of Charles Ridgely Howard and his parents and great-grandparents and all these other people. And so I asked Natalie, do you have any photos or any pictures of Hattie? And she said, yes, just one. It's no joke, about the size of my thumb. And it was, you know, a copy of a copy of a picture probably taken around the turn of the century after she was freed. And that was all she had. And suddenly there's this kernel of an idea, right? How can we put words to this ineffable moment? How can we make this something else? So now you can put the picture up. I'm not an artist, right? I can't sing, I can't dance, I can't paint. In high school, when I had to take art class as a required course, they put me in photography instead because I was so bad. I was in the marching band for a year, but my job was just to hold the tuba and stand because I was the only kid who could hold it. I wasn't allowed to play. This is not a joke. But one thing I do pride myself on is being able to know and make relationships with a lot of people. And so I reached out to some friends who were artists, and I said, "Do you know somebody, you know, a young black artist from Baltimore who works in portraiture, who might be able to help tell this story?" And so I was introduced to Des Thaniel. Des, at that point, was a student at MICA. She's now at Morgan State. And she sat down with Natalie and with Natalie's family and met with them multiple times to hear their story. And what she came back with was this. If you can see, this is 32 families, the 32 families that were enslaved at Hampton Plantation. That's just a copy, so if it falls, nobody freak out. 32 families that were enslaved at Hampton Plantation. The only face is Hattie's, because we don't have images of the other families that were enslaved at Hampton. But look at the grandeur of this painting, the honor and the dignity and the pride that these people were given. They weren't allowed to have this in life, but now it exists for posterity. And Des was able to tell that story, and in the process, give our congregation something to work with, some way to move forward. So we put this out front of the church at the corner of Bolton and Lafayette for 4 years. We had to take it down because it was getting damaged by the sun, but don't worry, it's in the church. And it began to work on us. And we noticed that Des had quite literally painted the path forward for us. Just as she had been able to give honor and dignity and pride to these people, so we needed to do what we could to bring honor and dignity and pride to the communities that our ancestors had harmed at Memorial. Because turns out it wasn't just those two priests who had slaves. It was most of the people who founded the church had enslaved people. And for 100 years, the church was a leader in segregation and furthering Jim Crow laws here in Baltimore. The Daughters of the Confederacy that Lauren was talking about, they were headquartered at the church. The first housing segregation ordinance was written in the parish hall of the church by the senior warden, president of the board of the church. They founded the Mount Royal Protective Association for the express purposes of keeping black people out of what is now the Bolton Hill neighborhood. There was a lot that we had to work through and a lot that we had to undo. But Des had painted the path for us. So it was easy then in 2021 when our church voted to start a reparations fund and invest $500,000 back into the 21217 zip code. People didn't bat an eye because they had seen what happens through art when you offer that honor and dignity and pride and power back. And they wanted to be a part of that. I did not think I would do this when I moved to Baltimore. This was not the plan. But because of Dez's work, because of Natalie's story, and the art that she has made out of her life, it's changed my life, it's changed our congregation's life, and it's changed, I think, our whole community's life. And so I am proud to stand here with all of you to show how art can change things, and I hope you all will find ways to follow the art that you see in the world to make this world better. Thank you.